It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right, needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5, touchdown Giants, 97 yards.
Now here's your host, John Schmell.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Good morning, everybody. Big Blue Kickoff Live is the Giants weekday morning, 9:30 a.m. every day, Monday through Friday. Call and talk show. You can call in and talk about the Giants at 201-939-4513, or you can participate in the conversation on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your calls in a bit. But first, I want to welcome in today's guest, and that's Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus. You can find him on Twitter at PFF underscore Pete. We had Pete on right before free agency started. He kind of helped preview free agency. Now that the Giants have done most of their work, we figured it would make a lot of sense to bring him back on and get his take on the moves the Giants did end up making. Pete, good morning. How's everything, buddy?
Doing well. Good morning to you, John.
All right, Pete, let's start with the offensive line. I think everybody figured that was the biggest area of need heading into free agency. The Giants did get a lot done. Jeff Schwartz, J.D. Walton, and, of course, John Jerry, the most recent signing. Pete, how do you think they did, and what do you think about the players the Giants brought in on that offensive line?
Well, first off, I don't think Jeff Schwartz is only the best free agent signing that the Giants made. I would argue he was the best signing that any team made this offseason for his level of play, and when you take into account the value that they got him for. He was our number one rated free agent guard in free agency. Looking at it, I mean, he was like, yeah, we thought he was the top guy at his position. And given, I think, the Giants got him for basically half of what some of the other top guards got. You look at, Schwartz, he got $15 million guaranteed, I believe, and a guy like Zane Beatles, who we have graded far below him, got almost twice that much. So, just looking at the contract, it's unbelievable the value they got for Schwartz there. And I think the reason they were able to do that, and this is something that I'm learning over time, is that in the NFL, your draft status just kind of never leaves you. People say, "Oh, the draft's a crapshoot," and you can't predict where these guys are picked or how they're going to pan out, blah blah blah. But the general managers they take into account draft stock even years after a guy was drafted. So if you look at a guy like Schwartz, he was a seventh round pick. He was a journeyman. He's had success wherever he's gone, but he's always been perennially underrated. I think it's because he didn't have those measurables coming out of college, and he was that seventh-round pick. Meanwhile, you look at a guy like Beatles and everyone, he was a high second-round pick. He played on the Broncos, started for basically his entire time there, and everyone's assuming that, he's still a very good guard. And if you look at both of their play over the last 4 years, it's not even close. Schwartz is clearly the better guy, but Beatles gets twice the amount of money just because of where he was drafted. And frankly, I think it's a shame.
Well, and another move the Giants made, and I agree, I think Jeff Schwartz was by far the Giants' best move this offseason. We talked about that on the show yesterday. The other guy the Giants brought in that, from the looks of it, is probably going to be penciled in at the starter at center is a guy who was a higher pick in the draft. He was a third-round pick a few years back. He's missed the last season and a half because of a very bad ankle injury, and that's J.D. Walton, who comes over from Denver. I think this one kind of caught people by surprise, especially how early in free agency it happened and how much guaranteed money he got in his contract. Pete, what do you think about J.D. Walton and his fit for the Giants at center?
Well, I know you and I had a quick conversation on Twitter about this, and you pointed out, given the guaranteed money that J.D. Walton is getting, it looks like he's plan A for the Giants at center. And frankly, I think that's a mistake. I think out of the guys that were out there, he was one of the riskier options. Going by our grades, you look back at 2012, he had those 3.5 games, basically, before he got injured. He was great. He only gave up actually one quarterback hurry in that time, which is spectacular pass blocking. But you got to throw in the caveat that was his time with Peyton Manning. And I've mentioned this before, when we were on the show last time, Peyton Manning makes all his offensive linemen look good because he gets rid of the ball so quickly and he's so good at setting up his protection. So, I think that you see that and, okay, that's promising, but then you look at his previous time and the 2 years before that with Tim Tebow and Kyle Orton, and I think they have the opposite effect where they make their offensive linemen look worse. By far our worst graded center in 2011, and then you go back to even further 2010, he was our fourth worst graded center. So, I don't think he's as great as he was with Manning. I don't think he's as bad as he was with Tebow with Penn Orton, but he's probably somewhere in the middle and maybe closer to the bad side. And that's kind of scary for a guy who's also coming off a big injury. So I'm not exactly sure what the Giants see in him. I hope that they're looking past that great stretch in 2012 because that's kind of a big commitment to make to a guy like this.
Do you see John Jerry as anything more than a backup depth guy, or do you think he could be a potential starter if, let's say, Chris Snee can't get back from these multiple hip surgeries and decides to retire at some point?
John Jerry, I think he's sort of the plan B at right guard. I'm thinking that if, say, Chris Snee does get injured or just declines or shows he doesn't have it anymore, I think the next step would be to just slide John Jerry into his spot and leave the rest of the guys where they are. I know the Giants, they prefer not to move everyone around. Jerry, he's actually been pretty consistent his entire career in that he is an excellent pass protector and a terrible run blocker. So, last season he was our fifth best graded pass blocking right guard and sixth worst graded run blocking right guard. So you look at that and that's, he has a clear deficiency in his game. If you look at it last year and how much Eli was getting pressured, maybe the Giants would obviously rather have that where he can at least hold up in pass protection, even if he's not getting a good push in the run game.
All right, at running back, the Giants brought back Payne Hillis, which I was a little surprised about, but a lot of NFL fans out there were happy to see him back. But they do bring in their starter, at least for the next couple of years, Rashad Jennings from Oakland. They get him on a very reasonable contract, a smaller one than Ben Tate got on the free agent market. How do you break down Rashad Jennings, and do you think he'll be a good fit here? And do you think he'll be able to carry the quote-unquote load with, 15 carries or so a game?
Yeah, I was really impressed with Rashad Jennings last season. He showed that he flat out outplayed Darren McFadden over there in Oakland, which frankly has been saying a lot. But even looking across the league, he averaged almost three yards per carry after contact, and that was one of the best rates in the league. He showed that the more carries you gave him, it seemed like the better he was getting. So I think he couldn't carry that full workload. Now, I want to throw in the caveat that he had a terrible 2012 season, the year before, where he didn't have many missed tackles, he wasn't getting many yards after contact at all. But if you want to look at the glass half full view of it, he also was coming off his 2011 knee injury. So maybe he wasn't full strength. He was finally 100% healthy last year, and that's the real Rashad Jennings we're going to see. So, if he plays like he did in Oakland last year, then that's an absolute steal for the Giants because he definitely showed a lot. And you're assuming if he gets more carries, he's just going to hopefully be able to keep up that efficiency.
All right, Pete, want to stick on the offensive ball. The Giants really didn't make any moves either at wide receiver. You can't really count Trindon Holliday, and Mario Manningham's more of a flyer, I think, than anything else. And tight end really seems to have a gaping hole, quite frankly, with only Larry Donnell and Adrian Robinson under the contract. Anybody still out there at any of those spots, considering how much money the Giants have left to spend, that you think could be a good fit to fill some of those holes so the Giants aren't under too much pressure heading into the draft where they have to take a couple of guys at those positions?
Well, first off, the Manningham signing was actually, I found it really interesting because I was thinking that, you know, the Giants, they have Cruz, they have Jernigan, you know, they have Randall, who's a good intermediate guy. Cruz and Jernigan, they can work the slot, and Cruz also does a good job outside as well. But the one guy that they didn't have and they were missing, I thought after they lost Manningham, was that deep threat that they could just kind of blow the top off the defense. And, I mean, if he can get back to that level, I think he's a great value signing for them. I think what I also like is that under the new offense, one of Manningham's biggest struggles was with those, we mentioned this last time that we spoke, but those option routes that Kevin Gilbride's offense was still relying upon. I can't tell you how many times you had one of those plays where you saw, you know, Manningham's cutting it inside, Eli's throwing a corner route, and
right.
All of a sudden, you know, the guy's swinging there to pick it off. So I think if he's in a more structured offense, I think he could have a little bit more success. So, you know, if you're looking at a guy who the Giants might go after, I think Earl Bennett would be a pretty good option. You know, the Bears cut him recently, I think. You know, he's been fairly good in his time. And also, a guy who I think is perennially underrated, although I know he's on the older side, Jason Aubon. I mean, if the Giants are looking for, you know, he's a more of a slot guy, but if the Giants are looking for, like, a good blocking receiver, he's one of the best out there. So, you know, I could see a guy like him having some success. So, you know, I would steer clear from a guy like Miles Austin based on his injury history. Devon Best, he has some of the worst hands in the NFL. Last year he dropped basically a quarter of the passes that were thrown at him. So, I wouldn't look into those guys. Nate Burleson hasn't really been, you know, that special from a film perspective in a few years. So I wouldn't go after one of those guys. But I think a guy like Bennett or Vaughn, you know, could be good out there. Or even if they want to take a big flyer, but I doubt his price would be a little high. Sidney Rice, if they think he's healthy, you know, he's not a bad option either.
All right, how about tight end, Pete? Anybody still out there in the market? I know one of your favorite run blockers, Ben Hartstock, is still out there. Brandon Pettigrew signed a monster deal to go back to Detroit that I think everybody thought was a little bit ridiculous. Anybody still out there besides JerMichael Finley, the big name, that you think could be at least a stopgap for the Giants to give them some protection?
Yeah, that's the Pettigrew contract. Is just, you aren't going to flap your head because it's just, yeah, I feel like his run blocking reputation is way overblown. He hasn't been a dominant run blocker for a couple of years now. But honestly, maybe a guy like Dustin Kelly, the Giants think that he's if he's healthy again, you know, coming off that injury. But you know, he could be that kind of receiving guy. Bringing Bear Pascal back is not a bad idea based on his versatility. I think a lot of these guys, or even you look at a guy like Fred Davis, could be solid. I wouldn't touch a guy like Ed Dixon. He's, you know, not an efficient pass blocker, and he's actually a worse run blocker. So, I think this is the kind of situation where the Giants would go into the draft, and it's going to be the situation with a lot of these guys at this point in free agency. The Giants are going to go into the draft, they're going to see what needs they have, and then whatever they didn't fill there, they'll kind of go back to the pool. So I think you can get a guy like Hartsock or get a guy like maybe even Dustin Keller, you know, a couple months from now when you realize, okay, well, we needed that tight end in the draft and we really didn't get the guy we were looking for.
No question about it. All right, let's jump to defense here, P, and I'll start with the guy, really the one guy the Giants decided to bring back, and that's John Beeson. From the latest numbers, it looked like his contract is more reasonable than it looked when it was first signed. I know you thought he was a little overrated last year as a middle linebacker. Your thoughts on the Giants investing what they did in John Beeson?
Yep. So John Beeson, and I mentioned this last time, and every time I say it on Twitter, I have about 100 Giants fans just yelling at me, explaining how much of a leader John Beeson is. But the fact is that he had the worst coverage grade of any linebacker we measured last season. So, you know, throughout the entire league, you know, any linebacker, he was the worst in coverage. And I think that's a severe deficiency on his point. And I was thinking that the Giants would pay him more like a, you know, a two-down, run-stopping, you know, middle presence. And they paid him like, you know, like an every-down middle linebacker, you know, one of the top 10, 15 in the league. So, you know, I think that they clearly know things about his leadership that we at PFF don't know. We're not in the locker room, so we don't know how he's, you know, motivating guys to hit the weights and getting them into position on every play. So he obviously brings that element that the Giants think he has. But, you know, looking at it, and I figure, well, you know, what happened to him in coverage? And going back over the years, back in 2010, which was his last full season before all the injuries came, he had one of our highest linebacker coverage grades. And I saw him doing stuff like you know, running down the field and diving to bat away passes 20 yards downfield. I saw him, you know, manning up with Tony Gonzalez one-on-one and just staying right with him and deflecting passes. So, I mean, he was great back in 2010. Then, you know, he had the injury in 2011. He came back for a little bit in 2012, and he started to show some decline in 2012. Teams started picking on him. The Saints just, you know, tore him apart one game with Darren Sproles, Jimmy Graham. And then looking at last season, you know, it was a mix of – there are times where he looked lost in coverage. I mean, if you look at the film of the Chargers game, there were times where he was just on the other side of the field of where his guy was catching the ball.
Yeah, you know, Pete, it's funny you mentioned that. One of the plays you broke down inside the film was a big third down play against the Chargers in that game. And literally Antonio Gates settles down right behind the marker, right in front of John Beeson, and he just keeps backpedaling away from him right in the middle of the field.
Exactly, yeah. And there were other plays you saw where, you know, it's the they've got everyone covered downfield and Rivers just dumped it off to the running back and he scrambled for, you know, 15 yards because Beeson was way downfield too. And it's baffling to me why he would be, because, you know, there was no one else underneath to cover that guy. So, you know, he looked lost in coverage at times. So hopefully that will improve as he becomes a little more familiar with the defense the offseason. But also there were times where he flat out just didn't look athletic enough to cover guys. I mean, he got beaten by Joseph Fourier. He got beaten by Joey Bell in the Detroit game pretty handily. So, you know, you think that, you know, he was once a great, you know, he was once a great cover linebacker, and now he just doesn't have some of that skill anymore. So hopefully, you know, the offseason helps with maybe he's a little bit more healthy. But, I mean, that's a clear deficiency for a guy who you're paying to be one of the top middle linebackers in the game.
What's your take on Jameel McClain? Is he coming off a neck injury, trying to, you know, get back into the swing of things here? He played last year a little bit. How do you see him fitting in? I would assume you think he's going to start on the strong side.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, I saw someone mention that they signed Jameel McClain when the O'Brien Schofield deal went through, and maybe for the money that made sense, but not for their roles. I mean, they're completely different players. If O'Brien Schofield did join the Giants, he would have been kind of like in that Joker role that Mathias Tuanuka played, where he, you know, he has experience playing stand up as a linebacker, but also getting down the line and playing as a defensive end. McClain is not like that. He's basically your Keith Rivers. He's a, you know, strong side linebacker. He's a two down linebacker. They're not going to bring him in on third and long. They're not going to make him cover anyone because he's clearly coverage isn't his strength at all. And you know, looking at it, I think that they'd be best to keep him on the edge as much as possible. I was looking at it from his Ravens tape last night, and when they have him inside as an inside linebacker, they play him at middle linebacker a good amount too. He doesn't have that instinct or that quick moves or even that strength inside to you know, sniff out running plays between the tackles. Basically, I saw a lot of times where he would just kind of get lost in the wash in a play and just easily get shoved back by an offensive lineman. So, you know, I think McClain, you know, they're going to keep him on the strong side and hopefully keep him on the edge, which is where they had Rivers most of the time last season too. So he had a poor run defense grade from us last season, but I think McClain can be better this year if the Giants use him the right way.
We're joined by Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus. You can find him on Twitter at PFF_Pete. you know, the Giants really didn't add a whole lot on the defensive line, Pete, but they did lose Justin Tuck and Linval Joseph. Rather than going through each guy individually, because I think, you know, Giant fans are pretty familiar with them, how do you see the Giants' defensive line in general stacking up right now? And do you think there's a big need to add somebody, either a tackle or end, when we get to the NFL draft in May?
I'm a little bit more conscious about a tackle right now than I am end. I know tackle, they don't have a ton of bodies out there. But tackle's also a spot where last season they added some guys late in the game, and those guys did pretty well. I think a guy like Mike Patterson, they're going to kind of keep him out there. I know he wants to return to the Giants, and I think they'll probably bring him back after the draft just with the depth. But I think you're going to have Jonathan Hankins in there in that Linval Joseph role on the nose and the one technique right over the center. And you're going to have Colin Jenkins as more of that pass rushing three technique defensive tackle who plays a little bit farther out over a guard. So I think that's how the defensive tackles are going to stack up. And I think they'll definitely look for some depth there in the draft. Defensive end, you know, I'm just a little, you know, a little concerned based on, you know, what they have there right now. That, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul is far from a sure thing, obviously. You know, who knows if he'll be back 100%. And Mathias Kunuka, he actually was one of our worst-graded defensive ends last season. So I think DeMontre Moore's got to take some big steps. But I think, honestly, looking at the lack of depth that they have there right now, I just think that the Giants are going to have to, unless they sign a guy like Robert Ayers, you know, but before the draft, I think they're probably going to go defensive end first round, and that makes sense to me.
Wow, okay. Well, the Giants, they did use a lot of their resources, Pete, on the secondary, and they spent big on Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, a guy we've talked about before. I guess we can start there. I know you've said before that he's not one to really stick his nose in there and stop the run, which I'm sure is going to drive Coach Coughlin nuts, but he does have some pretty good coverage ability to stay with guys down the field.
Yeah, and it also helps that actually, and this is, I feel like something that one of those like stats you see, you're like, oh wow, I didn't realize that. But Prince Mukamara was actually our best run graded run defense graded cornerback last season. So I mean, he's kind of the other end of the spectrum. Rodgers-Cromartie kind of lacks has never really been a good run defender. But you know, Rodgers-Cromartie is. He's inconsistent over his career. He actually had, you know, back in 2009, his first full season starting for the Cardinals, he had a third-best coverage grade. Then he kind of dropped far the next year. Then with the Eagles, they miscast him as a slot cornerback. That's not where he's good. Either you want to keep him outside. But you know, he had our fourth highest cornerback coverage grade last season, and there was an eight-game stretch where he surrendered only six passes in coverage, which is just ridiculous. And even in the playoffs, you know, he didn't surrender a single deep pass, you know, a pass that went over 20 yards downfield. So, I mean, he had as good a season as you could want for a guy who you signed to a prove-it deal last year. So, you know, if he plays at that level, then that's a great value for the Giants because they didn't have to pay him like even how much the Packers paid a guy like Sam Shields who did not have a good year last year. So, you know, I think that Rodgers-Cromartie is, you know, I think he's a huge pickup for them. And if he keeps his head on straight and if the Giants can keep him motivated, he's one of the most athletic guys out there at corner. So I think that's a huge signing for them.
And I thought Walter Thurman was a very underrated guy the Giants brought in, and he should be very valuable for them in the slot replacing Terrell Thomas's role from last year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, this might just be, you know, my emphasis on value, but I'm more excited for Walter Thurman than I am Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie just because of based on what they got him for and the role they're going to put him in. I think he's going to be great in the slot for them. He played over 70% of his career snaps have been in slot coverage, and he actually hasn't allowed a single touchdown in slot coverage in his entire career. So. And he actually, he hasn't allowed a single touchdown overall, either flat or lining up with the outside since 2011. So, you know, I know he hasn't been an every game starter, but, you know, he's one of those guys who you can line him up inside and he's, you know, that type of, you know, that physical, Seahawks mentality where he's gonna mug his guy inside and he's going to be pretty good there. So, you know, I think Walter Thurman, like I thought, I thought if you went into the season with Walter Thurman as your number two cornerback and Tremaine McBride as your number three quarterback, that's a pretty good upgrade for the Giants. And now that you have, you know, Thurman's your number three slot guy, and McBride, who created well for us last season, is now your number four cornerback. I mean, the Giants' cornerback depth, you could put it up there with any group in the league.
Yeah, Pete, it seems to me now, and you mentioned it, how, you know, maybe the pass rush from the defensive end position could be a little bit of a question mark. Having these type of cover guys in the secondary, all of which can play man-on-man and, you know, line up and guard their guy on their side of the field, Perry Fuel should be able to get a little bit more creative with blitz packages here, bring Will Hill, bring Ontrell Roll, bring John Beeson, and try to maybe manufacture some pressure rather than just trying to get pressure with that front four.
I agree, and I think that's the big reason they signed Stevie Brown too. I think they're going to do a lot of that big nickel. We saw that 2011 Super Bowl season where they had DM Grant in there a lot as a linebacker, in front of Andrew Roll and Kenny Phillips. So I think they're going to feel going to have a lot more flexibility here. I also think that he's going to play a lot more man coverage across the board. He started to do that a little bit with Mukamar in the last couple weeks last season. He had him playing up a little bit more into the line of scrimmage. He had him tracking receivers going across the field. So I can see them getting in a situation where Prince and Rodgers Cromartie can switch sides. They'll follow, maybe Rodgers Cromartie will follow the number one guy. Prince will follow the number two. And Fuel will be a little more versatile in the way he can even use his coverages. And frankly, I think that's the big thing with Prince is, you know, the Giants have wanted him to be more aggressive. I think sometimes he doesn't trust his skills enough because he'll lay off a guy and let him get the short pass when he clearly has the skill to get in there and break it up. But he tends to play back a little more, and I think if Fuel can get him playing up, that can make a big difference for his game.
Two more questions for Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus. Thanks a lot for joining us again, Pete. Very quickly, you mentioned the draft, and you thought the Giants could go defensive end of the first round. I'm not sure how much of your draft work you have done yet, and we'll definitely have you on before the draft gets here. Just want to get a taste from you where you think the Giants can go in the first round, and based off of that, how day two is going to look for them.
Yep, I also said defensive end of the first round. I mean, assuming a good enough guy is there. You know, I don't think that. I don't think that they would reach for a guy. Maybe you could even see them going for maybe a receiver there in the first round if you see a guy like Mike Evans is there and they really like him, or maybe a guy like a Marquise Lee if they're high on him, and this is where we're talking about the tight end. I could see Eric Ebron being their top pick if he's there and if McAdoo wants that kind of. Wants that kind of threat in his offense. So, honestly, I think I haven't gotten to like the specific guys yet. So, hopefully we'll be able to chat before the draft.
Yeah, for sure.
Give you some specific names. But frankly, I think the Giants right now they signed a lot of guys because they had to. If you want to get some perspective, go on NFL.com on their free agent tracker. Look at the different teams, and when you sort by the Giants, their page seems to be like twice as long as any other because they've added so many guys and because they've lost so many guys. So I just think that they have a lot of needs. They have a lot of need for depth. I think especially at defensive line, they need some top notch talent too. So I'd be a bit surprised if they don't go defensive end or even defensive tackle in the first round. I just think that they have a lot of room there to work with and a lot of holes to fill still, and you're going to see them have a very loose best player available strategy, which honestly every team should have going into the draft anyway.
All right, Pete, final question. I'm going to kind of bounce off a question I got from one of our loyal Twitter followers, at MFarmer20. He's just curious. The people that, do your tape grading and everything are Pro Football Focus, just wondering what their background is. Is it a football background? What are their credentials? And you can build off of that by explaining, Pete, exactly what you guys do over there, what services you provide, and if people are interested in, getting your premium services, what they get and how they go about getting it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Pro Football Focus, our motto is we grade every player on every play in every game. So, you're looking at every snap and we're looking at all 22 players on the field and we're seeing what their roles are and how well they're carrying them out. So if you go to our site, and we have a premium subscription of $26.99 for the year, and if you sign up, you'll get basically access to a whole database of grades and statistics. So you'll be able to see who we graded as the best run blocking right guard in the league last season. Which offensive tackle gave up the most quarterback pressure, and not just sacks, but also quarterback hits and quarterback hurries. You can see which linebacker had the most run stops, meaning that a play where they had a tackle near the line of scrimmage, not just their general overall tackle stats, and which cornerbacks gave up the most yards in coverage, stuff like that. So that's the service that we provide. We're the only people out there who are looking and grading every player on every play, outside of NFL coaching rooms. It's a great site. And as far as the background that some of our guys have, some of them have a football background. Some of them have played a game. Some of them have been involved with teams before. But a lot of it is just guys who you'd be shocked. But myself, I never played football. I was never that gifted athletically. I'm sad to say. I've been a football junkie since I started watching the game, about 20 years ago, I have this thirst to keep watching film and looking at players, and a lot of it comes down to just we have a good system set up where you can kind of you go in, you look, and you can tell this guy's going here, this guy's going there, and we do an extensive amount of training for all of our guys to make sure that we're all on the same page, we're all looking at the same play the same way, so giving the same grade. I think it's almost one of the barriers that you see in football. People think that you need to have a great long football background, have learned under some coach to know exactly how to diagnose the cover two defense, but I mean, we've evolved long enough, I think fan knowledge and also access to game film where most people can figure out what kind of coverage a team is playing if you spend enough time learning it. So I think we have got a pretty good system set up. I think it takes a lot of the subjective scouting biases out of things by looking at every play, not just, a guy's highlights. I think we've got a great system set up. So if you go Pro Football Focus, and if you don't even want to pay for the premium, we have plenty of good articles up there that'll kind of explain, how every team's been doing in free agency and what the Giants' needs are and stuff like that.
Pete, we appreciate the time, my friend. Thanks so much, and we'll catch up again sometime in late April, early May before the draft, all right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Pete. Great stuff. All right, that's Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus. It's a great job, a good friend of the program, breaking down the New York Football Giants. And let's go right to your calls. You guys have been holding since the start of the show. Excellent job. Hopefully we entertained you while you're on hold there. Let's go to AJ down in South Carolina first. AJ, you've been holding the longest. What's going on, pal?
I'm doing good, John. Good morning.
Good morning.
I got two questions for you.
Yeah.
I know the Giants need a wide receiver. I really like this kid, Jordan Matthews, out of Vanderbilt. What's their chance to get him in the second round?
I haven't done a ton of work on Jordan Matthews. He's on my list. I'm going to do some wide receiver work either at the end of this week, start of next week. He's the guy that's probably going to be off the board in the second round. He has some speed. He's a little raw from what I understand. I think it'll be somebody the Giants look at if they don't pick a wide receiver on round number one. I think he's an interesting guy with some interesting talent. But I got to be honest, I have not watched a ton of tape on him yet, but I will try to get to that over the next week or so.
Okay. My second question before I go is Eric Ebron.
Yeah.
If Buffalo do draft him, what other tight ends in the draft do you think the Giants would get?
Well, I don't. If Ebron's off the board in round one, they're obviously not going to pick a tight end there. But that doesn't mean that there aren't some other good players that the Giants could get in round two. Now, I can't guarantee all these guys are going to be there in the second round. But the three guys that could be a potential pick for the Giants in the second round as follows. Austin Seferian Jenkins is one guy. He's 6'5", 260 out of Washington. A pretty good blocker. He plays in a pro-style offense. Not the most explosive guy, but he'll be a solid receiving tight end that can block. Jason Morrow broke all sorts of records in his time in college in terms of being a receiver, but he really never played on the line of scrimmage. He's more of a slot guy, so I'm not sure if he's going to be much of a fit, though he's a very good receiver. And then you have Troy Niklas. He's 6'6", 270 out of Notre Dame, four-year starter, probably the best blocking tight end in the draft, and he can catch the ball as well. So those would be your three options in the second round. If you want to wait to the third round, you're looking at a C.J. Federowicz type of guy out of Iowa, who's a pretty good blocker, can do a little bit of everything, but he's not going to be that type of impact player, though he could develop into a solid starter.
Okay, I'll get out the phone.
All right, appreciate it, AJ. Thank you, pal.
You're welcome.
Thanks, man. And I was dealing with a lot of people yesterday. A lot of people, it's funny. I get people coming from both sides on me here in terms of where the Giants should go in the first-round pick. I see Aaron Donald gaining some momentum as a potential first-round pick. A lot of people love Mike Evans. We'll see if he's there at 12 for the Giants. I think Donald will be. Evans, I think you're looking at, 60-40 no, but I think there's a shot. I think you're looking at a 50-50 shot on Ebron, maybe 60-40 yes. Now, apparently he did not have the best pro day in the world yesterday. We're going to try to get somebody on tomorrow to talk about that pro day and how he did it. And by the way, over the course of the next month and a half, we have some time here. I'm going to try to bring on people that covered some of these potential Giant picks in college and try to get kind of the inside scoop on a lot of these guys. So you have some good information heading into the draft on what these guys can do. But apparently Ebron had some drops in his pro day yesterday, which frankly isn't that much of a surprise. He had a bunch of concentration drops in college. He had one of the highest drop percentages of tight ends in college last year. But, he has that great athletic ability. So there's a give and take there. 201-939-4513. Ed in Surf City has also been holding since the start of the show. Ed, what's going on?
Nothing much. How are you?
I'm doing great, Ed.
Just something I like to point out is I hear callers saying that we should trade up to get a higher pick. And that's great to get a good player, but that's not necessarily the best option because you have to give up a lot to get those high picks. A good example is the Atlanta Falcons, who gave up five picks for Julio Jones. But most of their roster now suffers because they're missing pieces, meaning draft picks, to build a solid team through the draft.
Right.
And same thing with the Washington Redskins with the RG3. You can't give up half the draft in the kitchen sink for just one guy. And you can also make the argument that the Giants' lack of success over the past couple of seasons was due to the absence of making correct mid to late picks in the draft, which leads to many areas of uncertainties.
Yeah, Ed, I can make the argument if your team's in a position where they're close to a championship and you think you're one piece away, that's when I think you can trade the multiple picks to get the guy you're looking for. But And the Falcons, came within a final drive for a touchdown of, getting to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. So in that way, the Julio Jones thing made a lot of sense. But you're right. Once you trade those three or four picks, eventually, when you lose guys in free agency, other guys get older and retire, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you're going to feel the pain of not having all those picks and not making them. And I think you're right. That's why a team like the Giants don't like to trade picks to move up in drafts, because just the volume of players you bring in is so important, because only X number and X percentage is going to be successful. So you want to have as many shots as you can to get as many players in here that can help you for a long time to come.
Yes, and I have one more question for
sure.
You. Since the NFL banned dunking, can we now ban basketball talk from Big Blue Kickoff Live?
Nope. Sorry. Veto.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Ed. I appreciate it. And by the way, a lot of people have a problem with the banning the dunking thing. I don't care about the dunking thing only because, to me, that's not an exciting celebration. Whatever, it happens all the time. It's not that exciting to me. I mean, I guess it could damage the goalpost. That's why you ban it. I don't know. I'm not, a huge guy with the dunking, if, I want to ban or whatever. But I'm a guy, too, that says, if these guys want to celebrate and do, a group celebration that's creative and fun, that's not showing up the opponent and being in their face about it and being a jerk, I have no problem with it. you know, when Chad Ochocinco, I think it was him, picked up the pylon and, you know, kind of putted the football like a golf club, I thought that was funny. I thought it was funny. I really did. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that and having, like, you know, fun stuff like that going. I'm not saying show up the other team. I'm not saying be a jerk. But fun celebrations like that, I never had a problem with them. I think they're clever. Now, you know, carrying around a Sharpie in your sock, I could see the NFL being upset guys carrying props with them on the field. That I get. You know, or even, you know, hiding cell phones, you know, in the pylon. I get that. That's a prop on the field. That could, you know, interfere with play somehow. But, you know, let the guys have fun. Let them celebrate. It doesn't bother me. If they go too far, you give them a 15-yard penalty. You know? If you deem it's taunting and not just, you know, celebrating a good play. 201-939-4513. Paul in the Bronx is our final guy that was holding during that entire interview. Paul, thanks for hanging out with us. What do you got for me?
Hey, what's good? Good morning, John. I wanted to ask you a question. Yeah. I was wondering, because I heard a rumor that we released Jaquan Williams. Is that true?
I did not see anywhere that the Giants released Jaquan Williams. I'm not sure where you saw that. That is a huge surprise to me, and I frankly don't see that happening. I think he has some bad information there.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure on that. Another thing I wanted to address was about the draft. You know, like, I really think that with the 12th pick, I mean, we should just trade down a little bit, because I feel there is a team out there that's willing to trade up to get a player like Gilbert in the first round, and we could get that we need for places like tight end, the offensive end, and I even think a running back, and maybe we can get a linebacker that John Beasley can coach up while he's here.
Well, the key is they have to find somebody willing to trade up, though, and there has to be somebody at 12 that a team's that's picking in the late teens or early 20s even is going to be willing to move to get up to that spot. Now, if you get to 12 and, you know, you decide that, you know, a guy I'm going to get 7 picks from now is just as good as a guy I'm going to get at 12, then, yeah, you consider trading back. But I'd be a little bit careful, Paul, that you're not passing up on a playmaking type of guy, whether it's a Mike Evans, an Ebron, even a Zach Martin, if you really want an offensive lineman there, or if the Giants love Aaron Donald. I would be very weary of passing up a guy that could be a blue-chip, perennial Pro Bowler, All-Pro, potential Hall of Famer type of player at 12 just to get an extra pick later. I think it would have to make sense only based on how the talent dropped in that particular year in the draft.
Yeah, I agree with that. One last question I wanted to know is Corey Webster still playing, or he hasn't found the team yet?
Corey Webster right now is still a free agent.
Okay. Well, that's all I wanted to speak about. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate the call, man. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Shakes in Baltimore, Maryland next. Shakes, what's up, buddy?
That's all I know, man, John.
How are you, Shakes?
Okay. I'm all right, man. Okay. This racked my brain since the guy brought it up, because I knew I was going to get a little flack from it, but I didn't realize how much.
What are you talking about? What do you got?
When I spoke about moving up in the draft yesterday, like the possibility, I mean, people were coming at me with that. Man.
Well, you know, Shakes, that's the beauty of this, though. When you have a strong opinion, people are going to disagree with you, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's not, but I like to state my case, though. But, all right, let's just play the hypothetical.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Okay, so the main problem is we lose picks, right? Okay, so let's say this. So we want to move, 6 slots, try to get Watkins, right?
Theoretically, if that's what you want to try to do, okay.
Yeah, hypothetically. So, okay, what would it take to get that pick? Like,
to move up? Well, I will bring up the trade value chart here. Hold on. NFL draft trade value charts, and I will let you know exactly how many points that counts for. All right, if the Giants want to move up, you want to say they want to make a trade with the Falcons at 6? Is that what you're thinking?
Yes.
If they want to move from 12 to 6, that's the equivalent of, on this trade value chart that I'm looking at, the equivalent of 400 points. So a 400 points is basically the equivalent of a second round pick.
second-round pick. So it would be a first and a second?
The Giants would trade their 12th pick overall and their number two to move up to number six.
Oof, that's a little nasty. How about what if it was like a third and a fourth?
Let me see. A third and the fourth. The Giants' third-round pick would be worth about 200 points. Their fourth-round pick, that would not be enough value.
Wow.
They would have to trade either two threes or two to move up that many spots. Again, if you go by this trade value chart.
Okay. Well, my thinking was if you do that, if you move up, or maybe even just a few spots, maybe go up to eight, you know, something like that. My thinking was that if you lose that one pick or whatever, say the second, third round, whatever, then, you know, if...
Shakes, your line is breaking up again, bud. Sorry, I got to let you go. I can't hear you. Thanks, Shakes. Appreciate the call. Give me a call back tomorrow, 201-939-4513. Let's go to Roy in Rockaway. Roy, what's going on in Queens today?
Jersey.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. What's going on, Roy?
I don't think the Giants should move up at all. If you look at the draft this year, even though the Giants are not going to take one, the quarterbacks really are going to determine what the Giants do, 12th. There are five other players, I think, that are absolutely going to be gone by the time 12 comes around. The two offensive tackles, Mack, Clowney, and Watkins.
Agreed.
And so the issue is whether any of those four, or I guess five if you count Carr, quarterbacks are taken, and that's going to determine. I don't know if you've done any work on it, but I think a guy that the Giants are going to like a lot is Coney Ealy from Missouri, defensive end. He kind of has he's a really athletic guy, but I think 12 might be a little too high for him. I'd love to see the Giants, even if they drop back four or five spots, if Ebron or Evans is gone by the time he gets to 12. I guess Donald, they could take it 12 too, but I'd like to see them, if they're not going to get Evans or Ebron, you know, some impact player on offense for Eli, I'd like to see them drop back and, you know, pick up maybe a pick or two.
Roy, I would say for sure right now, if you're sitting there at 12, I think you're right about that. I think those four top guys you talked about are the guys that could be gone. In terms of Coney Ealy, I've done a lot of work on him the last couple of days, just trying to get a feel for him. To me, and people have described him as raw, he's a guy that is probably more of a run stopper right now than a pass rusher from everything I've read about him. He's a guy you're going to have to coach up a little bit and get better. He's a good athlete. He's a guy that has all the physical tools to be good. But I agree. I think at 12, he's probably a little bit too much of a project. I think a guy like Aaron Donald is much more of a NFL-ready, sure thing at 12 if you want to go defensive line. But if you want a defensive end and you're dead set on getting a pass rusher, I would say trade down to the late teens, and you probably should be able to get a guy like Ealy, though, again, remember, we're still, 6 weeks before the draft?
Right.
A lot of moving pieces, you know, guys can still move around a lot.
I didn't really want them to take Donald, but what I've read about Donald, and obviously he was really productive in college, I think Donald, I'd be okay with that. So I think he's going to play for the
Hey, Roy, I got to interrupt you. Your phone line's dying out, Tommy. If you want to give me a call back, feel free, but we could barely hear you there. Sorry, I had to cut you off there. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Derek down in Atlanta next. Derek, what's going on, buddy?
Hi, John. I was looking at the situation with the line right now, and combined with the linebacker, and even though I really like Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie, that side of the field run defense looks kind of scary. And I don't know if we project DeMontre Moore, you know, maybe trying to take some snaps out over there. But I just remember last year, a lot of times I see running backs run towards the sideline and cut out for big games. And right now, it's kind of looking horrible right now.
No, look, you're right. And when you take a look at the Giants, you know, defensive line could be a problem this year. And I think that's why, you know, especially Jerry Reese's history, whether you're talking about, you know, JPP, Linval Joseph, you know, guys like that, you know, Jenkins and more last year, the Giants look at defensive end as a huge priority. And I think in order to fill that spot, they could definitely look that way in the draft this offseason.
Yep. Just got a question about the draft and tight ends again. I was looking at the combine and did some research on this kid, Colt Lyerlier, how do you ever say his name?
What?
From Oregon.
Oh,
the one with a lot of troubles.
What position are you talking about here? Help me out.
Tight end.
Okay.
He's projected like he could be right up there with the top four or five tight ends, but because of his off the field issues, and I think he's falling like a rock.
He's also a smaller guy. He's only like 6'3", 240. He's much more of a receiver type, and he's really not much of a blocker.
Yeah. The question is, we've already penciled in basically saying that the Giants looking for a type of old tight end that we used to have, a blocker. But what if Adrian Robinson is actually the blocker, and we're looking for a receiver?
Well, I don't think anybody I don't think anybody knows what Adrian Robinson can do, to be quite honest with you.
Well, even Larry O'Donnell, right?
Yeah.
Isn't he big and physical? And
Larry Donald has shown the ability to block. He's a guy that could theoretically fill that role if you can trust him. But I don't think he's really, you know, proven that he's a guy you can trust yet.
JaMychal Finley, how was he used in as a Packer? Was he in line or was he split out?
Finley actually did everything, including line up in the backfield a little bit in Green Bay, too. So Finley did a little bit of everything playing for the Packers.
So bringing over the offensive guy, our new coordinator, you don't think he'll want a receiver, a tight end like JaMychal Finley, to use him like JaMychal Finley?
I think that's a great question. I'm not sure what type of tight end McAdoo wants. You know, I think you have to take into consideration what Coach Coughlin wants in the position as well, and he's going to want a guy that can block a little bit. But I'm sure Ben McAdoo wants a guy, too, that he can use as a weapon with the passing game. I think what the Giants do with the tight end position in the draft and the type of player they do pick, whether it's a Ebron or a Jason Morrow type, or if it's a Nicklaus, Safarian, Jenkins type, will go a long way towards figuring out exactly what this offense is going to look like.
Okay. And I just think that, you know, Ebron dropping those passes right over the middle, right in his hands, I mean, like maybe dropped him down to maybe the 20s.
I don't think he's dropping that far, my friend. A guy with that sort of talent, he's not dropping into the 20s.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you later. I just had this question about the, you know, the dot. We've got to do something about that. And I just think we need some more beef over there.
Thanks, Derek.
I don't even know if we need a patch rusher.
Appreciate it,
okay.
Bud. Goodbye. Yeah, and I think, you know, Coney Owens is a guy you can look at. I don't think he's a bad player, but he only had 7 sacks in his, you know, final year in college. And, you know, he's raw. And I hate to pick a guy that's going to require a lot of training with my first pick, especially when it's the 12th overall. 201-939-4513. Real quick, Shakes, you want to finish up your call. What else you got for me?
Yeah, I was just going to say, your boy had a few drops too, huh? I don't know. I think I'm kind of anti-Ebron, man. I don't like those drops. And then he had one that he double caught.
Mm-hmm. You know, guys, you know, none of these guys coming out of school are perfect, all right? Everybody that wants him to pick Mike Evans, they forget the fact that he hasn't played in a pro-style offense, and he got who knows how many of his catches, you know, on scramble plays from Johnny Manziel. So, you know, none of these guys you're going to pick with that 12th pick in the draft are going to be perfect. Everyone's going to have flaws. Is Ebron a perfect player? Of course not. Does he have risks? Is there a chance that certain parts of his game aren't going to work out? Of course there are. But I do believe in terms of needs that the Giants have and the talent that he has, there is a match there in the first round if the Giants decide to go in that direction. And I'm not even positive he's my first choice yet at 12. I just think he's a guy that certainly fits what the Giants need.
Okay. Hey, John, last thing real quick. I wanted to say
because somebody is saying, because I was like, you said it was heating up on the Aaron Donald situation. And I like Donald because he reminds me of John Randall with all the penetration that he gets up. And he's very quick.
I agree.
And he gets to the quarterback very fast. And if he's a Giant, I'll be very, very happy. But somebody was saying that maybe he'll be susceptible to the run. You know what I mean? But I don't think so. I think he'll have a lot of tackles for losses with all that penetration.
The one problem that people have with Aaron Donald, Chase, and thanks a lot for calling back, I appreciate it, is that he's not very large in terms of, you know, frame size and arm length. Only 6'1". He's got short arms for somebody that plays that position. And I think some people worry about his ability to keep up the production he had in college at the NFL level, considering, you know, those limitations physically for him. 201-939-4513. Steve's in Washington, D.C. Steve managed to play a little hooky from work today.
Yeah,
give us a call. What's up, Steve?
Snuck one in, buddy. How you doing this
doing
morning?
All right, Steve. What do you got?
Listen, I just want to go on complete record and sit here, and I'm just going to tell you this. You know, as much as I like to watch these college guys and have my, you know, hopes about who we'll bring in, this, that, the other, fact is I'm always really skeptical because they're college guys. They're not in the pros. And you really never know what they're going to bring to the pro table. So that's where I rely on the GM, who I've not only grown to trust but respect, and that's Jerry Reese. I do believe in the guy. And I know, you know, you're not always going to make the right call. You know, that's obvious. We can all be, you know, Monday morning quarterbacks to talk about things of the past. But I've never gone, since he's been here, I've never started a season like, oh, we didn't do anything. I mean, he's always given me something to be excited about, you know, every year. So with that being said, you know, I just wanted to say this. You know, I hope Eli can turn it around, because I think a big part of our lack of success last year really fell on Eli. And, of course, you can point out the obvious, the offensive line and the injuries, this, that, and the other. But I think between him and Eli's, you know, lack of, you know, productivity along with Kevin Gilbert, I think that was the biggest problem with the offense. And I think that's the reason why we brought, you know, McAdoo here. So with that being said, I really expect the offense to turn around. I know we don't have all the pieces in place yet, but I'm comfortable with what we got, and I'm confident that we'll get a receiver and a tight end. So I have a couple questions.
Well, Steve, first of all, sure. I agree with you. I think you're right, and that's why, while I love a player like Aaron Donald, I think he's going to be a very good player in the NFL, I worry about not adding a weapon to help out your offensive coordinator and your quarterback in round one. I don't think the Giants have done enough work on offense yet to say we're confident and we're done here and we're going to be in great shape in 2014. I still think they need help in the form of a playmaker, you know, whether it's a tight end or wide receiver, or even more help on the offensive line. I still think you need to improve this offense if you want to be where you want to be, you know, next season.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that we'll definitely get, you know, too many receivers are in the draft. I'm sure we'll get somebody if we don't, you know, get a tight end. I would like to think that we will get a playmaker, at least one good playmaker on offense. You know, it'd be hard for me to assume we can. But I also believe that we need to get LaJuan. You know, I know that's, you know, my buddy Shakes and everybody's like, oh, no. But I'm telling you, we're going to need a good offensive tackle to protect Eli. And I think we're going to change the philosophy a little bit. So I don't really know how involved the tight end will be in our new offense. But given the weapons we have and given the opportunities we have in the draft, I'm pretty confident that we will get the weapons that we all want. So I think our biggest concern and our biggest prayer should be that Eli has the type of year that we know that he can and should have. So, I'm very optimistic about that. I just feel like, you know, we're going to have the pieces in place. We're a lot better shaped than a lot of people thought we would be at this point. So, I just want to encourage everybody, just be patient. I know we need something to talk. We need something to talk about. We all want to look all smart, this, that, and the other. But they're the ones who are getting paid the big bucks to do that. And I'm confident they'll get it done. But where I lack confidence and where I'm hoping to be optimistic is that Eli can turn it around more than anything, because I think, like I said, the play calling and his, you know, he was shook last year. I think that we're going to change the philosophy, get rid of the ball a lot quicker, hit the running backs out of the backfield. And I think, well, you know, as far as the defense is concerned, you know, and I'll leave it with this question, John. Do you think we'll see more blitzing from our linebackers now that we have some solid corners and safeties. And I'm hoping that's where we're going to get the pass rush for us, because I'm really not sure JPP is going to be able to have the, you know, the type of year we want and him to have. You know, I hope he'll do less talking this year and a lot more training hard. But with Linville and Tuck gone, I'm really concerned about him. So I'll listen to what you have to say up the air, but I wanted to know about the you know, the linebackers. Do you think we'll see more out of them, since we clearly only have an opportunity to get one more end, and we definitely need them? Tiwi is not my favorite. So
thanks,
anyway,
Dave.
I'm listening up here, John. Thanks.
Appreciate it, man. And, yes, I do believe, and I mentioned this to, you know, Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus when he joined us earlier in the show, that having those type of cornerbacks to man up one-on-one and to do their thing outside and to, you know, take wide receivers out of the game, that does give the Giants a lot more freedom and Perry Fuel a lot more freedom to dial up more linebacker blitzes, dial more safety blitzes, even bring guys off the edge at cornerback if you want. But I think Perry Fuel will have a lot more freedom to be more aggressive, because he trusts that the guy the Giants have spent all this money on can come in and do a very good job covering man-on-man down the field. 201-939-4513. Victor in Texas. Victor, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, John? Listening to everybody talk about it, you know, the last caller, I totally agree. Some of the stuff, you know, it does fall on Eli, but let's look at the team as a whole. The whole team was kind of bad in a way, you know, with wide receivers, with offensive line.
Offensively, the team was a mess. It was a disaster.
Exactly, right? So I totally agree with you when you say, you know, we've addressed a lot of issues on defense and free agency, but looking at the draft now, and definitely with, you know, Ben McAdoo, and even Tom Coughlin brought it up in the NFC coaches breakfast this morning when they were talking about it, that, you know, they've almost finished installing that offense that he said is going to light a fire through everybody. He's going to make Eli happy. But check this out. Eli is not going to be happy throwing to, and no disrespect to these guys, a Mario Manningham, who's, you know, you don't know his physical state right now, but they say he's matured physically and mentally. And, you know, Victor Cruz, we know what he brings. But then you got Reuben Randall, you got Larry Donald, and you got Adrian Robinson, who, to me, you know, that's not the answer. And I know Jerry Reese has figured that out. That tight end is not the answer. Coming out of Cincinnati, I thought Adrian Robinson was going to be like the next big thing. He had the size, but he just hasn't panned out. So when you look at the draft and people are talking about moving up, I doubt we move up. We might move back if guys like Evans are gone, Donald's gone, and Ebron's gone. I see us moving back, gaining more picks, because if you think about it, the first round isn't like it used to be where you're going to get all that talent, because talent's going to flow to the second rounds. So if we can pick up, we can drop down, pick up another pick in the second round, that'll definitely improve our roster. But looking at that roster now, we need that playmaking, you know, tight end. We need somebody for him to throw the ball to. So I would say in the first round, typically what I want to see is, if we can't get Ebron, get a guy like Mike Evans. If we can't get Mike Evans, go Donald, right? And the second round, tight end, you know, to me the second best tight end in there is Troy Nicholas. This guy comes from a program where typically they run the ball heavy, and Tom Coughlin wants to run. He wants to get back to big blue football, big bodies moving big people around, you know? So looking at that, we pick him up. I think he'll fit perfect. He's a typical red zone type tight end. He's going to run his routes right. He reminds me of a thinner, more athletic Kevin Boss. You know, when you get in that red zone area, he's going to be there for Eli. And plus, he's a good blocker.
Well, and Victor, so, quite frankly, at 270, he would be bigger than Kevin Boss ever was, even after a second or third year here with the Giants.
Yeah, he's pretty athletic. And look at, I mean, I'm a Notre Dame fan, so I watch all their games. The guy has tremendous hands. And that offense, you know, Notre Dame, they block a lot. So he's not shy. He's not shy from blocking. Is his quickness not, you know, he's not like a quick guy like Ebron or nothing like that. He's not going to wow you with his speed, but he is going to wow you running his routes and his hands. And he's going to block. He's going to sit there and block. So I'm looking at that offense. If you could tell me what guy in this draft, if we can't get Mike Evans, because I believe we need a receiver, do you think a guy like a Kelvin Benjamin is something that we look at? Maybe later in the second round, if he's there.
Well, look, I think that's the beauty of the wide receiver, you know, class in this draft, Victor, and that's why I would hesitate taking Evans in the first round, only because I think you'll be able to get a very good wide receiver in round two. Someone mentioned that Vanderbilt wide receiver. The kid out of Clemson is somebody. Obviously the Martavius Bennett Bryan, I think, something like that. He's a guy that could go in the second or third round. You have Odell Beckham. He's a guy that a lot of people like. Brandon Cook should be gone by then. You know, maybe Marquise Lee drops in the draft. I know Jarvis Landry ran a bad 40 time at the combine, but his production in college and his game tape was phenomenal. So these are all sorts of wide receivers that could be there when the Giants pick in round two that, frankly, could step in and maybe even beat out Randall and Jernigan for the second or third receiving spot this year.
Exactly. And one more thing before I go. I'm really high on Aaron Donald. I watched him play Notre Dame. He just destroyed it. The guy can, you know, he does have short hands, but he has that thick base that I know that very few likes. He likes that thick guy in there. And him spaced up, you know, with Jenkins, I mean, that'll be, you know, it's not going to be Linville Joseph and Tuck on the outside pressuring that, getting that pressure pushed in, but him and Linville Joseph and Jonathan Hankins, those guys in the rotation, I think that's going to be a formidable front.
No, look, I agree. And if you add Aaron Donald, you know, maybe he might not start over Colin Jenkins right away. But then, you know what? It gives you the freedom. If you want to put Colin Jenkins out there, a tuck spot, a defensive end, you can do that too. So I get the logic of Aaron Donald. To me, to me, he's the only defensive lineman that is good enough and talented enough that would make sense for the Giants at 12. I don't think there's a defensive end that would be a good fit for the Giants in that spot, but I think Donald would at least have the talent, even if not the need, if the Giants decide to go there at 12. You know what I mean?
Exactly, John. John, I appreciate it, man.
Hey, anytime, Victor. Thanks for calling in, bud. Good to hear from you. 201-939-4513. Tim is in Jackson, New Jersey. Tim, what's up?
Nothing. I got a question for you. For the Giants draft, Eric Ebron from North Carolina. He's a native of Newark.
Yeah, you know, he is a Newark guy, Tim, and, you know, he had some issues at his pro day yesterday catching the football, apparently. And, yeah, we'll try to get somebody on to talk about, you know, everybody, you know, he's been a big focus of conversation the last week or so. I want to try to get a little bit more of a, you know, behind-the-scenes insider look at him. So I'll bring somebody on that covered him down in North Carolina, was at that pro day tomorrow. At least I'll make some phone calls, try to make that happen today. If I can track somebody down, use my old WFAN producer skills if I can. But look, I think he's an option. He's an option just like Luana's an option. He's an option just like Mike Evans or another wide receiver could be an option. He's an option just like Aaron Donald could be an option, just like Zach Martin could be an option. I mean, I think he's a guy you look at. He's a guy that has a skill set that fits a huge need on this roster since the Giants, frankly, don't have a lot of tight ends that have had success in the league. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Sam in Florida first. Sam, what's up?
Hey, what's up, man?
Nothing much, Sam. What do you got?
Just throw a different name in here. Because I personally think the three left tackles won't make it to 12. Obviously, it depends on how the quarterbacks go. But
right.
I think these guys are legit, man. I think these guys are real big time. And unless people are afraid of Taylor Lewan's, law and charges and their issues with whatever's going on with him, I don't think he'll make it.
And Sam, quite and frankly, then, I have seen a couple mock drafts in the last week or two that has all three tackles gone in the first 10 or 11 picks, so that is a possibility.
Yeah, so I think that might happen. I wish we had the Space Jam juice or Adrian Robinson, you know what I'm saying? Because he's just his injuries, man. I think he's legit. I think he would do really well in this offense if it is anything like Green Bay. I think he is pretty good, man. And even if we do get another tight end, I think with Adrian, I think we'll see double tight ends, someone on the line, someone off the line, just to give Eli some big targets maybe in the red zone.
Right.
But just to throw a different name in here and just something to look into the future because I think the draft is more about the future. And next year, not this year coming up, but the year after that, we have no safeties signed, right? I know Will Hill is more than likely not going anywhere. I can't imagine they're, hoping to Cooper Taylor to take over a spot. And Roll, he's a leader and all that stuff, but, I mean, he's a real prideful dude, and I feel like he'll have, another big year, and he's going to want something big, and we're not going to be able to afford it. And it looks like the Giants are trying to stay young. And Clinton Dix in at 12, and I know it's too early to say go for safety because we don't need him immediately, and usually you take a first-rounder to start immediately. But there's something that just a different name that nobody's really talked about because this guy's really talented. He's really, you know, big time. And for him to learn under Roll and be able to maybe take over after Roll leaves because there is no safeties, no starting safety signed after this year.
You know, Sam, that is really interesting. And, you know, it's funny. We had, you know, we raised eyebrows when the Giants picked the Hankins. We raised eyebrows when, you know, the Giants even picked the Jason Pierre-Paul when you had, you know, Tuck here and Kiwi and guys like that. Yeah. You're like, well, why do you really need this guy? It's because they look a couple years down the road. And you're right. Besides Will Hill, he'll probably be back. You know, Armstrong Roll is going to be a free agent. Stevie Brown only signed a one-year deal. So, you know, besides Cooper Taylor and Quinton Demps, I guess, too, but that was a one-year deal. You know, the Giants really don't have any safeties long-term. And, you know, Clinton Dix and even Calvin Pryor are two guys that are, you know, set to go somewhere around 15, give or take. So it wouldn't be crazy to consider them at 12. I just don't think the Giants right now have that luxury based on, you know, their needs and things like that. Do I think both those guys would be good players? Yeah. I think Clinton Dix is a guy that's probably going to be better in coverage. Pryor is more of a, you know, run-stuffing guy from everything I've read about the two of them. But, again, I'm sure it's two guys the Giants will look at. I just don't think they can afford to put even more resources into a secondary, something they use so much of their free agent money on.
Yeah, no, I get it. But, yeah, I'm thinking Aaron Donald, and I think Reese is – dream scenarios to jump back into somewhere between like 15 and 20. That's probably his dream, because I think a tight end, having a second round, we could really get something nice at tight end or at wide receiver. I just feel like, I don't know, I think we're expecting something, and unless these quarterbacks go in the first top 10, I don't think Taylor Wong's going to drop to 12, so I'm a little worried about that. And like you said, Mike Evans at 12 might be not a reach, but something that we could probably wait for. Ebron, you know, I don't know, give or take, this guy, we hear the great things and then we don't, and I don't know. So I think Aaron Donald is big time, man. He's nice in the middle. He's a little small, so people get scared, but he's nasty, man, and his motor's crazy.
Sam, I agree.
I like that guy.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's going to be an excellent NFL player. We appreciate the call, and I appreciate the creativity. Yep. We, you know, we really haven't talked much about the safeties in this draft class. Thanks for the call.
I mean,
thanks, buddy. Bye. Two more calls on the line. We'll take you two, and then we're going to say goodbye. Let's go to Frank in Staten Island. I haven't heard from Frank in quite a while. What's going on, pal?
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
All right, Frank. Good to hear from you. What's up?
Hey, listen, you know, I agree with what a lot of people are saying, that we could use a Mike Evans type or an Ebron type, but I've kind of broken down the roster based on our needs and our biggest holes in the team. I think currently right now, after what we've done in free agency and what we have left over from bona fide playmakers, or at least guys that can fill in admirably, I really got to believe that we have to go offensive line heavy. And that's, you know, that all depends on who's there when we pick. That all depends on the moves that we, you know, that we can make when we're up, obviously. But I got to think that, considering the fact that Robinson and Matthews are almost guaranteed to be gone, if Lewin or possibly maybe people reach a little bit and get Martin, I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, the only two guarantees going into this year right now, and you know, me, I think is, you got to think Schwartz and Pugh.
Right.
And then you think if Snee bounces back from the two hip surgeries, and if Snee has a bona fide center, then I think he'll play. I think he'll have a good year. But this kid Walton, he's no guarantee. You know, he started his rookie and sophomore year, he was ranked the worst center in the entire league. And then he didn't play for 2 years straight.
Yep.
Personally, I think if the kid from Michigan there, you know, if he checks out criminal-wise where it's a risk worth taking, I think we go him in the first round. And I would even shake it up, when I know a lot of Giants fans are against this, but in the second round, I would look at Kyle Van Noy or Shazier or one of those outside linebackers. We only have Jameel McClain for 1 year. And the other two, that Jay Williams and
Paysinger.
And Paysinger, you know, they fill in admirably, but listen, neither of those guys are playmakers.
Right.
I would possibly go tackle, outside linebacker, and then I would look at if Travis Swanson's there, the center in the third round, I would possibly grab him too.
Well, you know what, Frank? You and Paul Dottino can have a little bit of a powwow, because I think you guys are really looking at this draft the same way, and I don't think it's wrong necessarily, because to me the Giants still do need help on the offensive line. I agree. I still think you have a lot of questions there. You don't know about Walton. You don't know about Snee. John Jerry's, you know, an average whatever type of player. You know, who knows how Beattie's going to come back from that broken leg. And then, you know, Pugh and Schwartz, as you said, are the only sure thing. So if you really want to focus on getting this offensive line better, and I think Marcus Martin is a guy you could look at center two in the second round if you want to go in that direction, I think there is an argument to be made for that. But here's my larger point, and I'm not saying it has to be done in the first round, but I'm saying in the first 2 days, I think you do need to add somebody that can be a big play weapon for Eli Manning. Because right now, besides Victor Cruz, I'm not sure you have one.
Do you think Reuben Randall's going to take a step up, not only mentally, but also with his NFL IQ?
He better.
You know, route running. I think he's going to. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a total guess. I think he has the physical attributes. And if this kid could put it together, you know, listen, I'm not saying that this kid at all is going to be Hakeem Nicks, but, I mean, you have Victor Cruz. If you have a compliment to him, and then, I mean, listen, you're right. We do need another playmaker. But my whole thing is, you know, you can't run the ball or throw the ball without the guys up there to block them. And for the longest time, I've always been about either the playmaker or the linebacker. But, you know, I'm just feeling extremely strong about this kid, Ebron. I mean, you know, as much as this kid is such a playmaker down the field, I mean, Tom Coughlin likes guys that can block as well. You know what I'm saying?
Now you're right about that.
If you remember the kid that we drafted out of Wisconsin, he was extremely small.
Beckham.
And don't get me wrong. Beckham. And the kid really didn't have a place on this team. He was a little undersized. He couldn't block and played himself right off the team.
Yeah, Frank, I hear you, but I think, you know, Beckham was a guy that was, you know, 6'2", 230. You know, Ebron's 6'4", 250. He's a much bigger guy, and I think you have a much, much, much exponentially better chance of teaching him how to be a serviceable blocker and somebody that can do good enough in the running game as opposed to a guy like Beckham. But you're right. Look, the blocking and the drops are two big red flags on Ebron. There's no question about it, and it makes you think about it. It makes you question it. But at the same time, I think he could play that JerMichael Finley type of role in McAdoo's offense depending on what they bring over from Green Bay.
Hey, listen, and I do try to look at it from the other perspective, too.
Yeah.
You know, Eli is taking guys that no one's ever heard of, and he's made them above-average players.
That's true.
He could take a stud. He could put him right to the Pro Bowl. Who knows what this kid could do for him? It could be amazing things.
I hear you, Frank. I appreciate the call, man. Good stuff.
Thanks, brother.
I appreciate it, man. Good to hear from Frank. And, guys, look, I'm telling you, and I'm not even telling you that Ebron's my guy in the first round. I don't know yet. I haven't done enough work on everybody yet. Here's how I look at it. There are a lot of viable ways you can go here. You can go wide receiver if a Mike Evans is there. If he's not there, I'm not sure I like anybody else enough to go at 12. You can go offensive line with a Taro Lewan at 12 if you want. Franchise tackle, I get it. Zach Martin, a little bit of a reach, but look, no one questions Zach Martin's going to be a starting offensive lineman in this league for a long time and a potential Pro Bowler. Nobody's questioning that. Zach Martin is one of the safer picks you can make in this draft. Him and Jordan Matthews are two guys that are can't miss. They're going to be starters for 10 years in this league, period. They just are. So I'm not going to get mad if you do something like that. Ebron's a route you can go with tight end, playmaking tight end over the middle. And you can make the argument for Aaron Donald. Because I think he's a guy, I'm not going to call him can't miss because of some of his size issues, but I think he's a guy that'll be a productive three technique defensive tackle that can get to the quarterback and do a decent job against the run for a long time. Is he going to be John Randall? I don't know, but I do think John Randall's his upside. I think if he really works out, he could be that type of guy. That's how good he could be. Those are all viable options, folks. Heck, I can even make the argument for a C.J. Mosley if you want to go in that direction. I get that. And someone had the article today, I think it was Paul Schwartz in the New York Post, and he made a great point that the Giants did such a good job in free agency, they still have a lot of options in the draft without any must picks, except for tight end. I do think the Giants at this point have to pick a tight end in the draft at some point, unless they can add somebody else. And it would appear they have about $4 million left in cap space before the boss money comes off after June 1st. So they'll probably save that money for draft picks, post-June 1st cuts, and go from there. Though they could bring in one other veteran for about $2 million a year. I think they'd be comfortable with that, you know, up until the draft. Final call of the show. We're going to go Jimmy up in Rhode Island, the island state. What's going on? The ocean state. What's going on, Jimmy? How are you?
Hey, what's going on, man? Not so much ocean today, man. We got wind and cold. I don't know what's going on, man.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I could feel my car moving on the highway driving to work today. The wind was so bad. It was really, really windy.
Oh, man. So I love John Randall, man, just to tag off of what you're talking about, the passion that he had and everything.
Great player.
Aaron Donald sounds pretty good, but I'm here to talk to you. I love the draft, and I'd love to trade down, man. And I know you may not like this because I'm thinking about trading really far down. All right. So now with the way the draft is set up, it's so deep that, you know, a lot of teams are trying to trade down, and a lot of teams don't want, you know, to trade up. So I think that trading way down might be a little easier because you got a partner down there that, you know, maybe just missing one piece that might be more willing to move all the way up.
I think one thing, Jimmy, if let's say, you know, because right now you figure worst case scenario for the Giants, let's say only one quarterback goes in the top 11, right? So then you have less talented guys from the pick of 12. But let's say a team like the Browns, maybe the Browns decide to pick, Greg Robinson or Jordan Matthews or Jake Matthews, excuse me, with their, you know, pick at 5. But they also have that pick, I think it's 26 or 27 late in the first round. They say, well, you know what? The quarterback's still there. We want our cake. We want to eat it too. They can trade their, you know, late first round pick this year and maybe a 2 or a 3 or something like that. And the Giants could slide down that far. Again, that's an option, but I'd be really worried about not taking advantage of the 12th pick when you can get a different making Pro Bowl caliber type of player, which should be available at 12.
Yeah, I agree with you that, you know, you got just that opportunity of that 12. And, you know, Len is probably not liking what he's hearing. He's always saying value that pick and everything. And I'm with you, man. The Browns are that team. They have a ton of draft picks. They have like an extra 2, extra 3. They could be one of those teams that you could target, you know, because they're kind of dumb. They might give you a bunch of picks. So that might be a target. My target is the 49ers. They have a ton of picks, too, and they just got another pick with the compensatory pick.
Yeah.
And my trade with the Niners, they're down at 30. I'm using, like, the Jimmy Johnson's old trade value chart. So it's our pick is worth about $1,200. Their pick's worth about $620. I'll break it down. It works out to be basically they'd have to give us a 1, a 2, a 3, a 4, and 2 sevens. They have 3 sevens right now, so they'd have to give us 2 sevens. And so that's, you know, 6 extra picks. Now, it's hard to tell what that would, like, work out to. And, you know, the draft, it takes a few years before you know what a player is really worth. So I look back at, like, 2011, and I took those picks and I applied them to, like, those picks that we might get. So we would trade away Nick Fairley, which would be, like, he was, like, you know, at that spot, he was 13, but, you know, at 12, it was a quarterback. But what we would get in return would be the third pick, Muhammad Wilkerson. Shane Vereen would be the second-round pick that we get. Jerome Casey, you know, not but these and Julie Thomas in the fourth round, Malcolm Smith seventh round. So Nick Fairley type, which might be in this scenario probably Aaron Donald or Eric Ebron, but you're getting so much value, and this draft is even deeper than that draft was. You're getting so much value, but they're getting what they want, so everybody walks away happy, and the Giants get to fill out this roster and get some young depth. What do you think,
Jimmy? I think it's a creative idea. I think considering the Niners have so many extra picks, and they've always kind of gone out of their way to get extra picks in these drafts, and one of the reasons you get all these extra picks is so if you want to trade up to make a move like this, that's the type of trade you can make. So I think from that point of view, it makes a certain amount of sense. I just don't think I see either the Giants moving that far down or the Niners having to move that many picks in 1 year where kind of all their hard work, you know, goes down the drain in, you know, one foul swoop. But I appreciate the creativity. I think it would give the Giants a chance to really reload their roster, one that still I think is lacking in terms of depth. I like that idea as part of it. But, you know, at 30, you can still get a wide receiver there. You can get a guard, one of the best guards in the draft. I get where you're coming from.
Benjamin will probably be there.
Right, exactly. I appreciate it. I think it's something that, you know, Jerry Reese would listen to. I'm just not sure in the end either side would be willing to make that big of a move and agree to that type of deal.
I hear you. And one last thing. I was looking up on NFL.com, and it looks like that we have a seventh-round pick, but I thought we gave that up in the Beeson trade, and I was looking at it. It looks like they gave us our compensatory, and now we have a seventh-round pick and eight picks altogether, but I thought we would only have seven.
Yeah, I thought, quite honestly, that the Giants didn't have their seventh-round pick, and they lost it in the Beeson trade, too. Let me look into that. Let me see here. I got Eisen's story here. Let's see. Right now, the Giants, let's see. I don't have a full list here. I'm going to double-check that. Here we go. The Giants, this is from Michael Eisen. This is officially from the Giants from a week ago. So right now the Giants have the 12th pick, which is their first rounder, the 43rd pick, which is their second, 74th is their third, the 109th, which is their fourth, the 140th, which is their fifth, the 174th is the compensatory pick, and then the 187th, which is the sixth round pick. So no, they do not have a seventh round pick. You are correct. Well, whatever website had that was wrong.
Okay, NFL.com.
That's a bad job at NFL.com. They should know better than that.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the call, Jimmy.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, have a good one. Good to hear from Jimmy up in Rhode Island. But you know what, though? I like that. We had one caller talk about the safeties, which I thought was creative and it made sense because you're looking ahead as the guys not being signed. I think that's another cool little fun thing to talk about, you know, trading that far down and, you know, getting a bunch of picks and going for the old quantity over quality theory, which can apply over many different realms of the world. Everybody, good job. Tomorrow we should get some type of guest on to talk about Eric Ebron. I'll work on that today, and then we'll move on, and we'll, you know, as we move along, try to get other guys that have covered these draft picks one-on-one in college to get a better feel for, you know, some of these guys. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Big Blue Kickoff Live, 9:30 a.m. every weekday morning on Giants.com. Have a good one, everyone.